start with our blessing. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam Asher bachar banu mikol hamim Ve'natan lanu et torato Baruch atah Adonai Notein haTorah. I missed you. It was so weird to not have our class. It was also strange in Israel because they're a week ahead of us. So they did the Parsha. No, they're a week. Yeah, they're a week ahead. So they did the Parsha. It had to do with Pesach. And thank you so much, Valerie.
Well, that's not usual, right?
It happens occasionally. So they did the reading that we had already. It was weird. No, they skipped ahead. And so I missed like a whole week, so it's just very weird. It's Yom Tov on Shabbos, our second. Yeah, it was like a whole thing.
Will they be ahead of us for the rest of the year?
No, I think now this week they're going to do Bechukotai, and we're doing Bahar and Bechukotai.
So then
we'll be all together just in time for. It's weird being off. I mean, it's one of those things you always feel a constant sense of all Jews in the world are doing the same thing. So when it's off a little bit for these times, it's like, this is so weird. You know, it's just weird. So we'll all be together. Bechukotai is always done before Shavuot. And so there is a connection there. Part of this, I won't have the page to look up to tell you because I had planned one thing, but then I heard something just like right before I came that I wanted to share too. So I didn't have a chance to look up the details. So what I want to share with you first comes from Rav Yamer, who's actually at Yeshivat Shalavim, where my son is. Yamer, Y-A-M-M-E-R, Yamer. We are on Bahar and Bechukotai. So we have a double Parsha. Israel has a single Parsha, Bechukotai. And so we're actually going to turn to Bechukotai for now on page 709. And you can see, just right in the margin, that there it says miracles of blessing and curse. Oh, I need to interrupt myself. After class, there's a box, and I will lay out, I didn't have enough time to do it. There's a box of books, Judaic books, from my in-law's house. We're getting ready to sell the house. There are a few books I thought maybe people here might want, and so I'll put them out, and please feel free to take whatever you'd like. Okay, so just afterwards. I got sick in Israel, yeah. Okay, miracles of blessings and curse. So, isn't that so nice, Reach? Miracles of blessing and curse. Interesting, it says the miracles of blessing and curse. We consider it to be miraculous that there is such a thing as miracle, as blessings and curses. And the blessings and curses, which are, notice it does not say reward and punishment. It says blessings and curses, which are things that are beneficial, things that are pleasant, and things that are unpleasant. And it's all designed to help us get back on track. It's just like a series of consequences to help us be able to get ourselves where we need to go. And it's considered, thank you, lots of water. It's tremendous benefit to us so that we can fulfill our purpose in this world. Think about what it's like. Even students who are like in high school are not necessarily looking for blessings and curses get very frustrated when their teachers are delayed in grading their papers and giving them feedback. And they continue on to the next lesson and they don't know if they're doing well or if they're not. And then comes the final grade and it's like, wait, you never told me the whole time that I was failing. Like, what kind of teacher are you? They don't like it. So it's considered very beneficial to have feedback and to be told along the way, this is correct, this is not correct, no, you're a little here and a little guidance there. That's considered very helpful and miraculous. So the Jewish people, as a miracle, as a wonderful thing, were able to have these blessings and curses. That being said, they still are things that are negative for us. Is there a problem?
No hot water.
No, sorry.
Okay. So these miracles of the blessings and the curses. So if you look on page 711, it goes through the admonition of a whole series of punishments, of what will happen to the Jewish people. And it starts off beforehand, though, with the blessings. The blessings are on page 709, and then the curses continue. The blessings are very broad strokes, and they talk about all the wonderful things that will happen to the people, to the Jewish people. We'll have everything we need. Everything will be great. And it's presented in a very, very grand description. The admonitions are a series of punishments, and it just goes in order. Like, here's what's going to happen. If you still don't listen to what I'm telling you to do, then the next thing is going to happen. And if you still don't listen, and the next thing will happen. So it's broken down into a series. What's interesting is this series of, we'll call them blessings and curses, admonitions, is very similar to one, a set that appears later in the Torah in Parsha Ki Tavoh. When you come to that, it's like, okay, so that's interesting. That Parsha is always read before Rosh Hashanah. Okay, so that's read before Rosh Hashanah, and this is read before Shavuot. So the question that Rav Yamer asks and answers is, and it's through quotations from the Talmud as well, is that because Shavuot is a Yom Hadin, is a day of judgment, as is Rosh Hashanah. And so before we get into a day of judgment, there is a warning that tells us what it is that we should be doing and what we shouldn't be doing, what the consequences will be. So the question is, what is the day of judgment of Shavuot? I mean, we've heard it as lots of things, but Yom HaDin is never one of the descriptions that I've ever seen of what Shavuot is. People basically aren't even sure what Shavuot is, except Chag HaCheesecake, Chag HaConfirmation, Chag Ha, you know, it's like, you know, Blintzes, exactly, Chag HaDairy Meal. So people don't even know what it is. And say, we know that it's the giving of Torah, that we are commemorating the giving of Torah. So the question is, why is there a Yom HaDin on the day of giving Torah? And to answer that, we can look at one of the unusual commandments that is given to the Jewish people when the temple stood and in the Mishkan. We know that any time there was any kind of bread that was offered in the temple, in the Mishkan, it was always unleavened. It was always unleavened bread. Even the 12 loaves that are there from one week to the next are unleavened bread. The only time, it's a soft unleavened bread, it's not, you know, it stayed fresh and soft, but it was unleavened. It's flour and water.
But it's not chametz.
It's not chametz, but it wasn't, it didn't have to be protected. It just wasn't leavened. They just didn't put any yeast in it. It wasn't your challah like you make. No yeast. There was no yeast in it. It was just flour and water.
And it's not chametz.
But
all the pictures are cute little round little loaves.
Yeah. That's a miracle.
That's because in our minds we see.
In our minds it's challah.
Because that does rise.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's going to rise anyway.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it rises. It's like, so this is different than this. Don't think Passover. This is not the restrictions of you have 18 minutes, it must be flat and has to be hard and crunchy. This is natural bread. You take flour and water and you put it together. It's going to naturally rise, but there's no yeast. You don't have to put yeast in bread to make flour and water rise. That's just a natural process. So there was no leavened bread in the Mishkan or in the temple, with one exception for the holiday, and that was for the holiday of Shavuot. And then there were two loaves of regular bread that were brought. So that's interesting because it goes against the pattern. So the question is why? So we talked a little bit about this around the time of Tu B'Shvat, I believe. We talked about the judgment on trees, because Tu B'Shvat is the Rosh Hashanah of trees. It's the day of judgment of trees and their fruit and what's going to happen to them. One of the names of Shavuot is Chag HaBikurim, okay, of the fruits. Okay, so you'd think then that what we should bring to the temple would be fruits. But we didn't bring fruits then for Shavuot. We brought bread. So it's like, what does bread have to do with fruits? This is a day of judgment on the fruit of the tree. But then why am I bringing bread? So the answer to that question takes us all the way back to the Garden of Eden. Before the sin of eating from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, what grew on the trees was bread, not wheat, bread. It was like, it's like our blessing, it says, Hamotzi lechem min haaretz. That means who brings forth bread from the earth. When was the last time you brought bread from the earth? We bring wheat from the earth, and then what do we have to do to that wheat? We have to go through an incredible process to get ourselves some bread. And yet when we make the bracha on it, the blessing, we say, Hamotzi lechem min haaretz, the bread from the earth. Before we ate from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, The trees had bread on them. Now this will make sense when we understand the curse of Adam. After, with the curse of Adam, what was the curse that Adam was going to have to do? He's going to have to work for your bread, which meant that beforehand, you didn't have to work for your bread because your bread was going on the tree like a fruit. That was the real fruit of the tree, was bread. So that was considered the ideals. Like, that's like, you know, going to the hotel where, you know, your, if your bread is already made for you, and bread represents the most labor-intensive form of preparing food that a human being needs. That is considered the counter to that. It's like, if your bread is not made for you, you have a whole lot of work ahead of you. And you have backbreaking work, you have distracting work, you have work that's maybe going to work, it's not going to work, the crops are going to come, they're not going to come. There is so much that is involved. That is why it's called the curse, is because before it was going to be easy, but you didn't appreciate it and you didn't do it right when it was easy, so now I'm going to make it hard. So everything that's the curses that happens to the to Adam and Chava in the Garden of Eden, all those things happened more easily before, so that they would have time to serve God, to be in relationships. Like, you don't want to be in relationship? Then I'm going to fill up your time with a whole lot of other things. And for women, it was going to be the difficulty in childbirth, and not just the pain of that, but just raising children. It says, to the end of your days, raising children is going to give you a lot of aggravation. Susan.
But doesn't that defeat the purpose? Because then it's harder for us to have a relationship with God because we have all this hard work to do.
Exactly. So we have to earn it. We have to earn it. We have to work ourselves back. If you give somebody everything and they don't take advantage and use the situation the way it was meant to be used, then you take it away. It's like, you know, in, you know, drug treatment programs where the people go there, they have no privileges and they have to earn it back through staying sober, et cetera. It's like, okay, you're going to earn it back and then you can have it, and then you'll appreciate it because you worked for it, because you clearly were not able to take it in when I gave it to you for nothing. So now you have to earn it. So what we have happening, there was a question. Bethany?
No, you actually made the point I was going to make, is that, you know, if the point is to be thankful and grateful to God, then actually putting some work into it will increase that.
It makes it so that, and when we, it does, and that's, and it's because we were trying to be in relationships. Like, oh, you don't want the relationship? Okay, then let's see how you do with when you don't have enough time for it and you have to work for it. I mean, think about Tevye. You know, all he wants is enough time so he can sit in the synagogue and pray by the Eastern Wall. Okay, so that desire is actually cultivated by the fact that he doesn't have the time because he's out walking his poor lame horse trying to deliver milk. Okay? If he had all the time in the world, would he really use it productively? Would that really be something that he yearned for? We tend to only want something when we can't have it.
Although, Susan? We also have the concept of avodah, to serve God with work.
We do. So, but we have a choice, though, of what that work is going to be. It can be work and be labor that is difficult and time-consuming and takes a lot of our energy, or it can be service, doing it in the most easy way. So the bread grew on the trees, but they still had to pick the bread off the tree. Okay, so you say, okay, well, that's not so much work. We ask for that. We ask every month when we do the blessing for the new month, we ask for a livelihood, and when we ask for livelihood, we want it to be easy. Something that's easy, something that has good hours, something that leaves me a lot of free time, where I don't have to get up at the crack of dawn. We ask for it to be easy, not because we're lazy, but because we want to have as much time as possible to study Torah and to live a life, not even so much praying, just to study Torah, learn Torah, and be in relationship with God. Now, the truth is we can always be in relationship with God regardless of what we're doing. That's always for sure true. But if one could have it one way or the other way, it'd be nicer to have it easier. So we know that our matriarchs and patriarchs were very wealthy. They had a lot of free time, and they used their time productively. They use their time for introspection, for spiritual growth. That's like why we're here. We're not necessarily here to work in the fields. We are here to spiritually grow. Right now, we do our spiritual growth through working in the fields because that is part of our avodah. But there's the service of the Kohanim, that was called avodah also. So there's lots of ways to serve. We'd like it to be the most comfortable and easiest so that we can enjoy the relationship and not be exhausted. buy it, because there's only so much energy a person has. Gabi.
So in another lesson you gave us, you told us before Pesach that actually what was on the tree, remember the grapes, and that we were not patient, and if we waited till the kiddush,
yes,
then we would have been fine and not have this.
That was the tree of knowledge of good and evil, was grapes. This was not the tree of knowledge of good and evil being grapes. This was, there were trees in the garden that had bread.
Oh,
on them, okay. That's what they ate. They didn't just have apples and oranges and whatever.
It wasn't forbidden.
It was bread that was on the trees. Here, have some bread, because this bread is like a fundamental, even despite all everybody's gluten-free stuff, bread is considered fundamental nourishment for human beings and represents the human being. So bread and other fruits, that it was like a full meal, full nutrition.
Yeah.
Eileen.
It's hard for me to suspend the pragmatic part of my nature.
Yes.
To imagine freshly baked loaves hanging from a tree.
Yeah.
So, can I go to magical realism? Marquez writes about magical realism. Or should I just go to metaphor? Or should I just leave it alone?
You should go to a place to think about that if you had never seen the things that do grow on trees, growing on trees, you wouldn't believe it either. The things that we're just used to seeing, apples, oranges, bananas, coconuts, how are those things hanging in the tree and not falling off?
Right.
How? It's just because we see it. It's like, well, of course, that's fruit that grows on a tree. We can't imagine bread because, why is fruit? It's wrapped, it's cushioned, it's protected, and it stays fresh and doesn't rot on the tree. How does that happen? It was like, well, because that's how fruit grows. Anything we're used to becomes ordinary, and of course that's just natural. Freshly baked, freshly prepared bread, the truth is it's not such a big stretch, it's just outside of our experience.
Okay.
It's outside of our experience. My sister told me, I didn't know, do you know how Brussels sprouts grow? I never knew this.
No,
they grow on a stalk. I'm like, are you kidding? I thought they were like little cabbages growing in a row or something. And the first time I saw an artichoke bush, I had Steve, we pulled off on the highway and took a picture of it. I can't believe that's how those things grow. So if we don't see it, yes, it is Hadama. Artichoke is Hadama. So yeah, if we don't see it, it's outside our realm. So the truth is, it's not such an enormous shift to think of fresh bread. It's like, okay, fresh bread, that could happen. There's fresh fruit that's ready to eat. Don't have to do anything. Okay, so whatever you need to do to get to a place, but it's not metaphor, it's a reality.
It's, I'm willing to do it.
Okay, go for it.
Okay.
Susan.
Okay. Think Chagall, I mean, they're all flying. Can we take it, okay?
How does everything's bread represent
humanity? Bread represents a human being. It says the Adam is called the challah of God.
Really?
That it represents everything, like a complete package, nutrition, the way it is formed and it has to be created. Just on the side of the mystical, it says when a woman makes challah each week for Shabbos, she is recreating her husband. She is fashioning and forming him the way God created man initially.
So
it says, better to, if you don't have so much time, better to buy a kugel and make your challah than make a kugel and buy your challah. That it's making of your challah. If you can, this isn't like you have no husband if you don't do this. This is saying that it's very mystical, the whole process of bread is like a human being. And because the dough has to be worked. And the working is like this, you don't have to work an orange. You know, you just open it up and eat it. So bread needs to be worked. Yeah, rising, there's a whole thing, but just even the work that needs to be done, that we can't take a piece of wheat and eat it. That you have to do something to it in order to bring out its full potential. So it's the same thing with the human being. A human being comes into this world as raw material, and we need to get ourselves up to the bread level, a fine, refined bread. So that was the bread that was brought at Shavuot, representing man. But in this scenario, the bread is representing going back to the Garden of Eden. And Shavuot is a time where we have that potential to go back to that same level of pre-eating from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. It says when the Jewish people stood at Mount Sinai for the giving of Torah, they had the going back to the Garden of Eden opportunity. They were going to have the, like, rectify everything. Everything was, it says, like, everyone was healed of all their physical ailments. Everything was, like, turn back the clock. We're redoing the Garden of Eden. And we have an opportunity to have that, since that's what Shavuot represents. And that's the judgment that's being made. Is this year coming up going to be a year where we get the fruit and have the bread as our fruit? Or are we going to still have wheat that needs to be worked? And that's the judgment being made. So we've been going through a whole process since Pesach of tikkun, of repair, of getting ourselves back personally to be able to stand at Har Sinai so that we can come back to a place of, we want bread, we don't want this wheat anymore. Susan?
Do we still have time to do that between the time we read this and the time and Shavuot?
We still have some time. We'll have a week left because Shavuot starts on a week from Saturday night. A week from Saturday night, Sunday and Monday. Change your ways now. Yeah. It's never too late. Get in on the last week of Sfira counting.
You don't have to change your
ways. Yeah, to change and elevate ourselves. So this is what we're doing. So now what happens is that we know that unfortunately the Jewish people did not sustain their level. They had it at Mount Sinai, and in fact they had it through Na'aseh V'Nishma. They had clarity. So the Garden of Eden, before the eating from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, represents total clarity about who I am and what my purpose is in the world and what my relationship is with God. If someone has that, the clarity that the Jewish people, that the humanity had in the Garden of Eden was about who they were, what they was supposed to do, and their relationship with God. They don't have an internalized yetzer hara. They do not have an internalized evil inclination. It is externalized in the form of the snake. Okay, the snake is the external form. So it's not that it's not there, because there always has to be some form of countervailing force that's going to push in the opposite direction. But it's an external force. After the eating from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, the voice of the snake and the voice of the neshama are inside the same head. It's like when someone says, I'm hearing voices, that's not just somebody who's psychotic. That is, we are all hearing voices. We're hearing the voice of our yetzer hara, the evil inclination, and the yetzer tov, the good inclination. The problem is they speak with the same sounding voice. They don't have a voice that lets us know that it's the confusing agent. So I will call the yetzer hara the confusing agent that makes us not clear about what we're supposed to do. Once we eat from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, we have incorporated that confusion, that voice, and it goes into our head, and we don't have clarity, which is where the Torah comes to help us find the clarity, because our own voices are going to confuse us. We internalize that confusion. The Jewish people at Mount Sinai did not have confusion anymore. They had 49 days of eating manna, which was also part of their repair system. They were repaired from the inside, outside, from the food that they ate, as well as from the spiritual work that they did. That pure manna was, in a way, like eating, talk about Eileen suspending your disbelief, manna that comes from heaven, like, also ready to eat. It's like, they thought that was normal. When they went into the land of Israel and had food growing out of the ground, they thought that was weird. Whatever you get used to, that's what you think is normal. So the manna was like eating in the Garden of Eden before the sin of eating from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. So that's the comparison. Eating the manna was the same as eating from the bread that grew on the trees in the Garden of Eden before the eating from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. They had that clarity. It is that clarity that allows them to say, what do they say when Hashem presents the Torah to them of what they're going to do, what they will do? Na'aseh v'nishma. I will do it, we will do it, and we will listen. It says, who says that? You have to have total clarity to say that. If you have any confusion or doubts, you can't say that. That would be ludicrous. Na'aseh v'nishma, that's more like somebody who's in the military getting an order from their commanding officer, and they say, yes, sir, I'm ready to do that. If you're an average person and you are at work and you have a boss and you're not too sure if they know what they're doing, and they tell you, will you do this? You'll say, well, I don't know. Do you think it's really the best idea? Have you thought it out? What's the budget? You know, can I do it? Do you have any, you know, what are the... We start having all these questions because we're not so sure about them. We're not so sure about us, and we're not so sure about the whole thing. So where there are doubts, that means there's not clarity. And where there's not clarity, you cannot have that kind of affirmation of, na'aseh v'nishma, I'm on it. We're ready to do that. We know, however, that did not last, because just how many days later,
How many?
We had the sin, the 40 days later, we had the sin of the golden calf.
40 days later?
40 days after the giving of Torah, we had the sin of the golden calf, which we all know was a huge going back, bless you. It was equivalent to eating from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, and it caused people went back down. And the confusing agent, again, because they didn't have it inside of them, so in the Midrash, it's not in the text, bless you. In the Midrash, it says that Satan appeared to the Jewish people and showed them a vision of Moshe being dead and told them that he wasn't coming back. But it was an outside thing. It wasn't that they started amongst themselves just like, oh, you know, what do you think is happening and do we really trust this? It was an external vision that permeated them and got them reconfused and they made the wrong choice. The reason we know is that the women did not participate in that confusion. They did not fall victim to that problem, which is interesting because in a way that was a tikkun, a repair of Eve in the Garden of Eden, who did fall for it. The women standing at Sinai, they learned their lesson more. It's like, we're not falling for that again. And when the spies come back later, also with the confusion about who are we, what's God's promise, is this land really for us? How confused can you be? This is like the whole point of the whole thing. And the women are like, we're not falling for that again. And the men fall for it. So once that confusion enters, that is our reality now, is that we have that level of confusion. We've been trying to work our way out of that confusion based on the clarity that we received at Pesach when we sat at our seders. We talked about the Exodus. We talked about all the miracles. We talked about the plagues. We talked about the splitting of the sea. It's like, that's clarity. Everyone had clarity from that. But it was a clarity that was given by God. Like when somebody just like hits you over the head with something, you can't not have clarity. But it's not, you don't own your clarity. The time from the Exodus until Mount Sinai of those 49 days was earned clarity. They went through a process to earn their clarity. Marsha, 49 days, just like we're counting Omer. Marsha and then Susan.
Well, you know, I'm still kind of working on my picture book, Sunday School Judaism, where I remember pictures of the women bringing bracelets and, you know, it looked all like jewelry, you know, bringing the gold to make the golden calf. Not true.
No, not true at all. In fact, that specifically is in the Torah. The women did not participate in that. That's why we're rewarded with the Rosh Chodesh.
They took their own jewelry.
The men had jewelry. They had gotten it when the sea split and the Egyptians were drowned. All of their wealth came up onto the shores. Also, they had taken jewels. They had taken things out of Egypt before they left on the Exodus. God said, go get all the things from your neighbors and collect it, and you take it. The women held on to theirs. They're like, you're not taking it. So, you know, people always make the joke, of course women wouldn't part with their jewelry. It was like, we're not buying into that. Because then they gave it immediately, and the men followed on their heels. The men gave it. The women led in the giving for the Mishkan, because it was the same thing. They needed gold and silver and all of those precious things. The women were leading the pack in giving. So yeah, that was a mistake in the illustration. But is that hard to get a picture out of your mind? Once you see something, it's hard because it's like, I saw it. I know. That's right. It's like, so be careful what you look at. Be careful. Yes, Susan.
When the Moshiach comes, will we also be in a similar state to the Garden of Eden?
Yes.
And that no more Yetzer Hara?
The Yetzer Hara will be external. It will still be there, but it'll be external to us. There will still be choices, because there have to be choices. We still have to be able to exercise our free will. But we will not be confused. And that is a tremendous, there's no simcha, there's no joy or happiness greater than resolving doubts. It's when people have doubts, I don't know, I can't believe this, I'm not sure. It's like, people who live like that, they have a constant spiritual torment. They make themselves crazy. So when Mashiach comes, like, there'll be clarity and still choices to make, but it'll be made from a point of clarity. Just like any time you have a decision to make in your own life, when you feel clear about what the situation is, what the options are, and what the consequences are. You can't predict everything, but you feel like you have some clarity. And there are times we think, like, you know, I don't have enough clarity to make this decision. Either I'm too biased in how I feel about it, I don't have enough information, there's lots of ways, and then what do? People have that even when they're shopping. I don't know if I should get this dress, maybe I should go to every store in the mall and see if there's something better. It's like, people make themselves crazy on the most basic level. made myself crazy when we were picking countertops for our kitchen. I'm sitting there dobbing, like, should it be this? Should it be this silver stone or this silver stone? It's like, truth is, I don't even remember what the other one looked like, you know? So, but when we don't know, we make ourselves crazy. So Mashiach represents still having free choice, but having clarity about what those choices are. And that makes all the difference in the world. So Shavuot is this time when we're going to be a time of judgment. It is a Yom HaDin. It is a day of judgment, and it's called a day of judgment on the fruits of the trees. But it doesn't mean just like the fruits of the trees. It means on the fruit of whether we're going to have bread on our tree or whether we're going to have wheat in the field. And that becomes then symbolic of, am I going to have clarity and be able to have a direct relationship with Hashem, or am I going to wallow in another year of riddling myself with doubts and questions and everything else to make myself crazy that immobilizes me? Now, Judaism is all about asking questions, but questions are different than doubts. Questions are like, oh, I have a question about how this works. How, you know, what is the meaning of this? How can I understand it? What are the applications? Tell me more about it. Doubts are like, yeah, I don't know, you know, no, well. Right. You know, you make yourself nuts, and then you can't move forward. It really becomes immobilizing. So that's what we're asking for in Shavuot, is we want to stand and say, Na'aseh v'nishma. And the Torah reading, so we'll read the giving of Torah, the Torah reading on Shavuot, and we stand, and it's great, and we're reenacting that because that's really the choice. So that's the connection between the Parsha of Bechukotai coming before Shavuot with this warning, with the miracle of the blessings and the curses that is the parallel to the other Yom HaDin, the other Day of Judgment, with the blessings and the curses that are listed in Parsha Ki Tavo before Rosh Hashanah, which is another Day of Judgment of what is this year going to be. So on Rosh Hashanah, it is a judgment about what's our role going to be in the heavenly kingdom of being God's messengers in this world, what is our livelihood going to be, what are our physical resources going to be. Shavuot is more of a Yom HaDin of where are we going to be spiritually. Are we going to be in the realm of bread? Or are we going to be in the realm of wheat? And looking for bread. So the Jewish people then would bring the full leavened good bread to the temple then as the offering for Shavuot, which was really just such a beautiful idea. Let me ask, is there heat on in here? Or Susan, does it say unoccupied or occupied there? It's like, oh my gosh.
I just sit here sweating.
Okay, that's good. I guess that's okay. They're not into the air conditioning yet. Yes.
Just going back to, and maybe I just missed it, the vision that the Jews saw came from where?
From Satan, from the Satan.
Oh, by the way, the same thing happened.
So how do we know, when you say we can have questions, but we shouldn't have doubts, how do we know?
What's the question and what's the doubt?
But yes, yeah. When a vision comes from Satan,
so then you,
how do we know?
How do we know? Then you ask somebody who is well-versed in Torah to help guide you, to separate that out, because we don't know. The truth is, usually those visions aren't coming from outside, they're coming from inside our own head. You know, whether it's rationalizations about what we're supposed to do, it's like, no, I don't want to do this because of this, or like, oh no, this aveira, the sin, is really a mitzvah. We get ourselves so turned around that we take something that is forbidden and make it into, no, it's good. And in fact, people are doing the thing that's correct. They're wrong. They're bad. It, you know, we get it so discombobulated. So it's interesting that even the word discombobulate, bilbul in Hebrew, means to be confused. Okay. Bilbul. Doesn't that sound confusing? Instead of the word for clarity, which is barur, something that is clear. Okay, so something that's clear versus something that's a, even the word babbling, that's it's like, what? I mean, some of our minds are like that, like the Tower of Babel. So it's interesting, I learned this also, so fascinating, this is another time, is the Tikkun on Babel, the Tower of Babel of, and Babylonia, that's based on that, of Babel, is that that was about the confusion of language. But then what do we have for the Jewish people that also came from Babel, that came from Babylonia, that's about clarity, about clarity? The Talmud. The Talmud Bavli. And so it's like, ah, so there was like the tikkun of, instead of having every confusion in Babel, that becomes specifically the very place where reality is clarified through the laws of Torah and the explanation about halachas and how to be in this world. And the Talmud Bavli has greater, whatever, important significance than the Talmud Yerushalmi. You'd think, like, which is the Jerusalem Talmud, you would think, what could be better? You know, the Talmud developed in Jerusalem, slight differences. But we go by the Talmud Bavli. So anybody studying the Talmud, if you're in like a Daf Yomi or whatever, a daily study, it's Talmud Bavli. That's our most reliable source. Jan?
Can you explain Satan a little bit more?
Like, sure.
Did the men have a communal experience like they did when they heard God speak?
They had a communal experience.
The men.
Everyone had it, but the women didn't buy it. Okay, the women didn't buy it. They did not. They're like, we don't buy that. We don't buy that. Now, you have to, in order to buy it, you have to have a chink in your armor a little bit. So there's a little lack of trust there that entered into it, that the men were had trouble with their trust. But the women were counting too. So the women trusted that they misunderstood, that there was not a problem. They were willing to go along saying, we trust this whole process. The men started getting whatever. They didn't have Satan did not come with this vision on day 12. This was at the end where you're starting to get nervous. You know how it is when you're expecting somebody to come and they're a few minutes late, what happens in your mind? You start having worst case scenario going through your mind. So the women were faithful. So it's at the point. There's always like the point. So we're getting at the end, and it's the end, and the women are like, no, yeah, we may have counted wrong, but we trust that this is going to be fine. The men are like, I think there's something wrong. So as soon as you start thinking that, having that little doubt into your mind, then in swooshes the Satan with the doubt. Same thing.
Is Satan a being?
Okay, so it's a great question. Satan is a force. It's an angel. It's a malach of Hashem. And it works for God. We do not have the Christian idea of God and Satan duking it out. Satan is an employee of God and is there to be the force to create the choice. There has to be an ability to make a choice. So this was a moment of choice. This was a test of the Jewish people. Do you have trust or do you not? Well, if there's nothing that would make you not have trust, then there's no test, there's no way to demonstrate that you have it if there's nothing pushing you to not have it. So it's an expression of being able to have that choice. So that Satan force, angel of Hashem, is the, we call it the impeder, the one that impedes, the one that confuses us, the one that gives voice to the other side, the dark side. We also call it, this is the one angel that has multiple jobs. It also becomes the prosecutor when we do something wrong and we speak Lashon Hara, for example, we gossip. It opens the mouth of the prosecutor to be able to speak Lashon Hara, true negative things about us in the heavenly court. And it also becomes like the agent of the court to carry out punishment. So it has all those roles. So we talk about it as an external versus and also an internal force. So our Yetzer Hara, our evil inclination, is the internal manifestation of Satan. So we don't have the, you know, horns and pitchfork kind of Satan, that devil type of thing, idea, but it is based on a whole concept that there has to be this countervailing spiritual energy that allows for us to have choice. Otherwise, we're like on automatic pilot. And the angels are on automatic pilot. All the other angels, their job, and they do it. They don't have a sort of like, should I do my job or maybe I shouldn't do my job? It's like the angel Gabriel of Gavura, Raphael, that is the angel of healing. It's like, no, I don't feel like healing. I'll do something else today. So that's only a human being that is tormented with this. Like, should I do what I was sent into this world to do? No, I think I'll watch TV. So, you know, the animals and angels are both called chayot. They're both called animals. So the chayot ha-kodesh, the holy animals, versus the chayot of the earth. It's like you don't find a cow that decides it's not going to be a cow. That's going to, like, I'd rather be a duck. You know, we don't have that. Only human beings, because we have this force in us, that causes us to grapple with, should we fulfill our purpose in this world? Should I even investigate what my purpose is in this world? No, I think I'll do something else. So that's our challenge. But the beauty is, says it's interesting, that angels, this is really interesting, it says the angels could not receive Torah because the Torah is for human beings. And one, but it's described, it says that angels don't have knees. They don't have knees. Knees, K-N-E-E-S. They don't have knees. They only have legs. But they don't have knees. So what does that mean? It says, in order to get up if you fall, you have to have knees to bend so you can get yourself up. Otherwise, you're like, I've fallen and I can't get up. And that's what the angel is, okay? You can't get up, so no knees, can't get up. So it says an angel can't fail in its mission. It's not going to ever fall, and therefore it doesn't need knees. And because it doesn't need knees, it doesn't have knees, and therefore it doesn't have the Torah. Human beings have knees in the both the physical and spiritual because we need to be able to get up after falling and when we make mistakes. Says that you have to have knees. I remember, you know, learning to cross-country ski, and you get in like some deep snow, it's like, I can't get up. So, but spiritually, it says, you can always get up because you have knees. And so the human beings, is that that's our nature, is that that's the power of teshuva, is because we have knees in order to get up.
Susan? Also, isn't the shoresh bereth, is knee? And then we're the only ones that can give bracha to God.
Yes, so the word birkayim and bracha, it's bet resh chaf.
Nice.
It's the same for baruch. So that, and what do we say when we are doing the Shemona Esrei, when we begin the Shemona Esrei, the very first thing we do, you can't see my knees because they're covered, so whatever. Baruch atah Hashem. Okay?
And the angels can't bless
They can bless God. They can say holy. They say kadosh, kadosh, kadosh. But they can't bend their knee. So they bless God. We imitate the blessing, but our blessing is considered more profound because we can bend our knee and because we have a choice of whether we do it or not. Angels don't have a choice. They are the heavenly host. They're the na'aseh v'nishma. And we're the like, are they going to say na'aseh v'nishma? Are they going to be like, no, I think not. Okay, so every year we're being asked, are we going to say na'aseh v'nishma and have clarity, or are we not? So that is the judgment that's made. But the judgment isn't like, well, you know, in my opinion, you're not going to. It's like, we get exactly what we each worked on during these past 49 days. And for some of us, in this last week of final pushing effort, just like cramming for the test, we can certainly do that and finish up. Beth Ann.
I've also struggled with that doubt certainty thing because it seems like on either end of the extremes, it's not. So what I've come up just for myself, and you can tell me when I'm wrong, doubt and certainty are on a line, but faith, emuna, is what sort of brings you up.
Very nicely, very nice.
You can still be somewhere along that line, but you're in a different dimension.
Yes, very nice. So emuna is
so doubt and certainty are just flat concepts, whereas emuna is something that is
Emuna, great. Very nice. So emuna is faith.
Beautiful.
Emuna is faith and trust, and it's where we go when we do have doubts. It's like, I'm not sure about this, but I trust Hashem. It's the same thing, if anything. If you have a doubt, a slight doubt about something in a relationship, you have a doubt. Then the question is, do you have trust to overcome that doubt and find an answer to resolve your question? At some point, you have to resolve your question. And at some point, if your doubt is, you have so much doubt about the relationship, you can't have the relationship because it's been undermined by doubt. It's like if you don't trust the person, that you can't have a relationship without trust. So there are always questions, and they talk about the great people would have doubts, but their doubts were on specific things, and then they still continued on. They didn't let it impede them. So you could have a big discussion, God this, God that, and it's like, okay, it's 1 o'clock, time for mincha. It wasn't like, okay, you know, I'm not doing anything until I resolve all my doubts. It's like, well, don't do that, because there's always questions. And it's really kind of hard to determine what's a doubt and what's a question. So that's a finer tuned, longer conversation to have. But emuna is definitely like, you know, like I look at the world, you know, you look at the papers, like, I have doubts about how the world is going to survive in for the next, you know, 10 minutes maybe. But I have my emuna in Hashem is like, God is running the show, so I don't have to have all the answers to those questions. I can proceed. And otherwise you would just sit there and say, like, you know, why go on? Because the world's falling apart. So we don't do that. we continue on. So that is our Shavuot, is to bring us to this place of clarity, and we are reaching to get back to the place of the way the Garden of Eden was before the eating from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. We want to have that clarity. Now, the truth is that we're not going to reach ultimate clarity. We're happy if we can have a few clear moments, and if we can have some clarity on Shavuot, and we do things to help us have clarity. One of the things is that we stay up late. Now, you don't have to make yourself sick, but we stay up later than you would for, like, the most exciting event in your life, kind of staying up late. And that's kind of counterintuitive, because most of us, when we stay up late, if you talk about how clear thinking are you when you stay up late, they've done studies. People who are tired, it's worse than when they're impaired by alcohol or other substance abuse. It's worse. So it's not that kind of clarity. You're not going to say, give me a test kind of clarity. But there is something to be said about somewhat bypassing our intellectual processing. Because sometimes what trips us up is that we're almost thinking too much. Now, Judaism is big on thinking. We're supposed to be thinking. But sometimes we get tangled up in our thoughts. And if we would just let ourselves go to a higher place and connect to our neshamas, which do have clarity, our neshamas always have clarity, similar to on Yom Kippur, when we deprive ourselves of physicality in order to access we weaken our bodies in order to access our stronger neshama, being tired does a similar thing in that our bodies are not really worth so much, and we're not so clear thinking, but we may be able to attach ourselves to our neshamas, which never sleep. Our neshamas don't go to sleep. They're always alert and connected to Hashem. So when our body, we can have this kind of relationship, and actually, if we can stay awake to appreciate it, to connect to our neshamas more. And we know that the Jewish people, we do a tikkun. They were supposed to have not been able to go to sleep the night before receiving Torah, and instead they went to sleep. That was supposed to show that they had excitement and enthusiasm. So part of what we're doing is a tikkun, a repair of that minuscule lacking in enthusiasm. But part of it is to get ourselves to a place of clarity. And if you've ever been to, you know, sometimes if you go on a retreat or you go someplace where they're just kind of like bombarding you with spiritual whatever, great things that happen. On one hand, you come back and you are so exhausted. And you're not even sure what they said. Okay, it's like you went to one thing after the next and you're exhausted. And you're elated at the same time. So that's the place that we're trying to get to on Shavuot, is a place where we've gone into a different dimension from our physical bodies and have entered the dimension of our neshama. And it's our neshama that can say na'aseh v'nishma with that clarity, and then hopefully we try to reconnect our neshama to our body on Shavuot during the day and bring that all together. But we're trying to access that experience of standing again at Sinai. And it's done with the Torah reading and with all the different things that we do to try to get ourselves there. So God willing that we'll be able to reach that place. When we celebrate Shavuot, so in the United States it's a two-day holiday, so it'll be on Sunday and Monday. It works out very well. It's very nicely for people this year who are not necessarily normally connected to Shavuot because it's on a Sunday and Memorial Day. So sometimes, you know, when it's Tuesday, Wednesday, people are like, you know, my life, Shavuot, like, what am I doing? It doesn't really fit in. But having it be on a weekend and following Shabbos, too, I mean, it's coming, you know, right from Shabbos into Shavuot, really helps because you're kind of like already on a Shabbos high, and then we go into Shavuot. So the receiving of Torah was supposed to be on Shabbos. That was the ideal, is because Shabbos represents a standing at Sinai also. When we read the Torah on Shabbos, that is a reenactment of Sinai, that we're receiving it there in a public way, and we read the Parsha. So that's a Sinai experience, and then we go into Shavuot, a mega Sinai experience, and then hopefully we're able to launch ourselves for the year. It's also a great thing to do before the summer, because I think we all, you know, did anybody go to year-round school when you grew up? Okay, we went to school and you finished, I mean, usually, you know, we finished like the end of May, the beginning of June, and then we kind of tend to check out. Okay? So, and that's one of the reasons why Shavuot often gets short shrift, is because it was outside of the Sunday school calendar. And because sometimes if it falls in June, you were done with your Sunday school, and so therefore you missed Shavuot, really, unless you had confirmation or, you know, some sort of a program, cheesecake program. It just wasn't on the radar screen. And what do you do after Pesach? It's so intense with the Seder. And Shavuot, you're standing at Sinai. It's like, what do you do to celebrate that? So one of the things that's done in communities and in shuls around the world, I don't know if your shul does it, I don't know if my shul does it, is to decorate your synagogues with greenery. Because it says that everything blossomed on Mount Sinai when the Torah was given. So it's decorated with greenery. Some people put up a chuppah and decorate that, because it's also the marriage of the Jewish people with God, which is, you know, kind of helps people get an image of what we're doing. A lot of people, unfortunately, have gone away from the decorating aspects, but it really, it helps, because we're not doing anything else. There's not a, you know, Dom Sfardea, here's the matzah, here's the harosis, here's the maror, here are the four questions. Here, we don't have anything to do, and so it gets reduced to, so what do? And this is more, so Torah study. And interestingly, in Israel, the night before Shavuos has become, even in the secular world, in Tel Aviv, has, now I'm not saying everything they're studying is necessarily anything that would be at all consistent with the Torah or Judaism or anything else, but it's Jewish people who are feeling something, and they are getting together and having all-night learning, you know, in cafes and things like that, and they're having nights going on. So you can go to Tel Aviv, and it's like the happening thing, which means, it's like, okay, we're getting the Jewish people together, and it's on Erev Shavuot, and they want to do something, and so there's just like a few missing pieces to kind of fill in to get it on the right track, but it's at least it's on the radar screen of being something. It's so huge. That's our goal, okay, is to do that. So the idea is to stay up and do something, just not to stay up all night if that doesn't work for you. I stopped staying up all night after the last time I did it. I stayed up all night, I was fine. And then for the morning davening, which is amazing to do at daybreak, was beautiful. And as soon as I sat down, and within a few pages, I was sound asleep. I missed the Torah reading. I missed the whole thing. I'm like, well, that was really stupid, because that like kind of missed the whole point. So I stay up usually like until, you know, whatever works for you, that's just a little more than you would stay up for a party, is to do that. And that's the way that we can bring ourselves, and it has to be self-generated. It's really much joining community and being with other people, that's the best thing. Trying to have a Shavuot celebration on your own is going to be a hard thing to do, because it's hard to stay up all by yourself, learning all by yourself by yourself. So we are imitating standing at Sinai with all of the Jewish people and receiving the Torah. There was a beautiful description of, and I've seen it artistically represented, I don't know by which artist, says that the Jewish people are the Torah. And so it's very important to be with Jewish people and be with the community on Shavuos. And that the Jewish people stood around Mount Sinai in columns, like the columns of the Torah, with every person as a letter of the Torah. So the picture is like from above, and it looks like it's just a Torah scroll, like lying flat around Mount Sinai, and that the Jewish people are the Torah. So it says God, Torah, and the Jewish people are one. So to the extent that we are, I don't know, I don't have it, and I don't know who the artist was, but that was the way that we're supposed to understand. So to be with other Jewish people is really important for Shavuos, so that we can have that experience. It's also easier to stay up if other people are there, and there's coffee, and you kind of can lose, like being in Las Vegas, where you can lose track of time.
Susan. All our neshamas were there.
All of our neshamas were there, so we are very good. So we are standing where we stood, so it's really standing again at Sinai. Not like, oh, I wish I would have been there. It's like, we were there, and we're standing there together, and we should stand together again, and God willing, we should reach the clarity where we can bring that bread and not have wheat anymore, have all that time, and be able to learn Torah and to enjoy our relationship. It's interesting too that this year of having Shavuot during a Shemitah year, because Shemitah, the sabbatical year, is very interesting being in Israel, of the farmers that are observing it, and so it's like, what do you do when you're not busy planting? It's like, you learn Torah, you do acts of chesed, you spend time with your family. It's like Shabbos for a year. except you can drive, and you can cook, and you can do all those other things. It's a transformational place to be. It says, the Shemitah and Shavuot of standing at Sinai, all of that is like, it's all the same idea. So we've got a triple header. We've got Shavuot on the heels of Shabbos during a Shemitah year. It's like, that should be enough, like, hello, 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 hello. Mm-hmm. This is what the Jewish life is really all about. And the rest of it is like what we do when we don't have yet the perfected world. So God willing, we'll be able to have that bread, we'll have a Shabbos, we'll have a sabbatical. And it's like, just like when somebody has a sabbatical for their professional life, it doesn't mean they dafka don't just sit around doing nothing. That's when they do something to enrich what they normally do. That's where you gain. You go someplace else and you learn something and you get refreshed. So it's not a do nothing, it's an enrichment. It says Shavuot is our enrichment day of enrichment. Following on Shabbos, our day of enrichment. During a Shemitah year, our year of enrichment. So we've got both at the year level, at the week level, and the day level, everything having to do with refreshing. It's like just like your on your computer. Refresh. I just refresh the program. And I don't know, symbolic of the fresh bread. It's like, I am refreshed. I'm ready to go. And I enter my summer with that rather than like, okay, time to check out. It's like, no, time to check in. And that's our goal, is to be really re-energized for the summer. And that hopefully that our summers are not wasted time. And some people have more free time, or at least there's an illusion of more free time, and to use it well. Have a wonderful, wonderful Shabbos and Shavuos. And Eileen, would you like to make your announcement?
Yeah, this will just take a minute. Ellen and I went to Israel in December on the Jewish Women's Renaissance Project. And it is an unbelievable trip, transformational trip. And the organization partners with many other, like the Jewish Experience and AISH, and they have international and domestic tremendous connections. So the idea is that we are realized that the well-being of the American Jewish community depends solely on the well-being of women. And the well-being of Israel depends on women. So with those two goals in mind, they designed a trip that sends women to Israel, highly subsidized. So after going to that trip, I took it on that I want to raise the money to send other women to Israel. Because once they go, they come back, and their connection to Israel and to their families and to their Judaism increases tremendously. So we are doing a walk to Israel. We're not walking to, oh, so confused, we're walking. How many miles is that? I can't walk that many miles.
But we're only walking 100 miles.
We're walking 100 miles, but if anybody wants
each
to
of us.
Sponsor us, or get a crew, it starts
May
18th of this month, or get your own crew and try to raise $500 for yourself, call me. I'm going to pass out my cards. Call me and I'll walk you through how to register. But I want to raise $500. Ellen's going to raise $500, $1,000, whatever, some big number. And then if all of you want to help us or do your own crew, but we're just going to walk. So we can walk together, we can walk apart.
We use Fitbits, and it automatically registers us. It goes up on our website and shows like how much we've walked, et cetera. So.
Is that something Lori Palatnik tried also last year?
We did it last year. I did it last year, and everybody was very generous who supported me. I appreciate it. And if you'd like to support me or Eileen or both, we would love it. Even a small, small amount is greatly appreciated.
Really.
A lot. I don't remember the number.
Oh, and the Israeli government matches everything we raise because they see the potency.
They've joined in the partnership with this.
Yeah, they match it.
Which is really amazing. So, all right, I want to conclude since I know people have places to get to. We will not meet next week because I'll be in Houston for Shavuos. Please enjoy and create whatever you can. Find a synagogue that's doing something in the evening so that you can enjoy and do some Torah study in Houston.
Are you teaching?
In Houston, yes.
In Houston?
I'm going to Houston. That's why I won't be here next Thursday.
Saturday night. So I have a question. In Shavuot, can we cook? What are the laws?
You can cook on Shavuot with a flame that is already on. Yes, you can.
Like when there's no class.
I know.
Ansel Melnett is talking about her aliyah at 11:30, but I think it's a...
She's making aliyah?
No, she's talking about when they made Aliyah
the 60s. Oh, I was going to say, wow.
Yeah.
I was going to say, wow.
I think it's a kavod.
Oh, please look at these books. Let me just set this out.
And then I want to remind that in Israel, we do have something from